Today's podcast is brought to you in part by Powerful Creators Mentoring. Are you ready to manifest rapid growth in your business or your sales career? Head over to powerfulcreators.net/mentoring. And when you're checking out, remember to enter in promo code MENTOR96 to get 96% off your first mentoring session. Today's show is also brought to you in part by Naked Warrior Recovery. I have been on a personal health journey to improve myself, and after stumbling across Naked Warrior's Happy Berry energy drink with all the good vitamins and electrolytes to give you a great balance and mental clarity without the junk and jitters like other brands give you, I personally can't get enough of Naked Warrior's energy drink powder, and it actually tastes like Happy Berries. Click the link in the bio and type promo code JBOLTON at checkout for 20% off.
Welcome to the Josh Bolton Show, where we dive into interesting and inspiring conversations. And now, your host, Josh Bolton.
There he is.
Hey. Sorry, I actually clicked on the link already, and it told me, oh, it hasn't started yet. And I was thinking, will it update? But then I realized after you sent me the message back, oh, I need to click on it again. Oh, dang it.
Yeah, I was sitting there. I'm like, shoot, do I need to send another one? That seems a little rude, though.
Yeah, I usually like to be on time unless, well, I'm stuck in another meeting. But now it's 8 p.m. here and my usual meetings are over for today.
Okay, that's not too late for you either. Yep. So I want to say, any interesting meetings today for you?
The usual clients, but makes me happy. Earning money, I make them happy, and I'm actually having fun with most of my clients during the meeting, so not too bad.
Good, that's very good. So you specifically specialize in startup coaching, if I get that right.
I'm not necessarily coach. So let me go back a little bit. Okay. I used to be a normal consultant in capital markets for quite some time, which I was for almost 10 years. And as a hobby, I started a startup podcast. And at one point, the company I was working for at the time decided they wanted to do more with startups. So basically, they asked me if I could help them to connect them to startups. So basically, my role changed to be a startup scout. So I helped them to find interesting startups. They introduced, at least that was the idea, they introduced the startups to their clients, and then they did the implementation projects with their consulting workforce.
Okay. So that's what started, or is that what you still do?
That is what it all started. Then they basically shut down the area I was working in. And so I decided to try now by myself, venturing out, being an entrepreneur, because I always wanted to do that. I had my first startup interview back in 2012.
Oh, wow.
And that was end of 2020. I knew I got some money from the contract. So they don't just kick me out. They give me some money, give me some time for orientation. That was totally fine. And so I decided to take the money and start to try it. Looking back now at the height of the corona, it wasn't necessarily the best time to venture out for myself. And I really, really had to adjust what I was planning to do. How I wanted to earn money completely changed. And the frequency of my podcast changed. But basically, I changed almost everything. And now it looks like it is working out for the long term.
Good. I want to say a lot of entrepreneurs, as I've talked to them on my show, a few have started in the heat of the lockdowns and all that. And they said it was scary in the moment, but it was probably the best decision because no one else wanted to start their endeavors.
Yeah, partly true. So basically what I was doing, the podcast worked. And during Corona, it even worked better. So more people stayed at home. More people discovered my content. Plus, I also started the world's first 24/7 internet radio station just dedicated to startups, tech topics, and entrepreneurship. It's called startup.radio. So www.startup.radio. And then other podcasters joined. So basically, we have an all-English program. We have podcasters from the US, from Europe, and Asia, many different places. And it makes a very interesting program. And it's growing like crazy. Sometimes we have month-on-month growth rates of more than 40% without investing any money in marketing.
That's insane.
Yeah, and then things happen. For example, I used to have like 150, 200 listeners a day, and mm-hmm. then something happened. I don't know what. And my audience from Mexico jumped from zero to like 250 a day. I still don't know what happened, but I'm happy for every listener.
Maybe someone locally just listened to your stuff and just saying, hey, you know, this place is really good. You should give it a check and just spread like wildfire.
Maybe, awesome. Maybe also the same happened in Brazil. I don't know what happened there, but basically most people listening to me, they're completely spread across the world, like the US, Canada, Europe. Usually it's like a third Europe, a third North America, including Canada, but they're most of the time only Toronto. And then the other third is totally rest of the world. I've been in podcast charts from Japan to Taiwan to Indonesia, Philippines, South Africa, Brazil. I think it was Uruguay where I've been in the iTunes and the Spotify podcast charts. It's totally crazy.
Yeah. And then that's one of the things I've had a lot of people like asking me about podcasting. I'm like, this is the power of podcasting that like no one can fully explain, is that you're helping lives that you may or may not ever meet in your lifetime, but you've changed their whole trajectory.
Yes, 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 yes. I know about a few stories that happened. Unfortunately, I cannot discuss many of them because they basically found investors. And they don't want to disclose that. But basically, that's what I'm doing now as a business. So basically, I have this big media outreach. I reach something 20 to 100,000 entrepreneurs and investors each month. But that includes all like the podcast, like my website, like social media and so on. It actually has to be more. It's almost above 200,000. Yes. Sorry. Got the numbers wrong here. And basically a lot of people are talking to me. They try to book meetings with me, and without tools that help me to organize my calendar, I would be already dead. Oh,
same here.
And an AI filter for your mailbox. Totally worth it. I get an email every 6 hours from this AI filter, and usually there are 50 to 250 emails in it.
Wow.
Yep. And without such tools, wouldn't just work. And so I talk to a lot of people, investors, startups, corporates, and so on and so forth, and then do my best to really match them. So usually I'm working for like bigger companies that can afford to buy other companies. And most of the time I'm trying to reach out to entrepreneurs to tell them, hey, I know someone who may want to buy your company, who may want to invest in your company. But I realized pretty soon that it's always very, very hard to really get directly to the entrepreneur. So at one time I was calling a startup in Brooklyn, marketing technology startup. I got straight put to sales. And I opened the conversation with, my client is interested in buying. And she said, which product? And I said, the whole company. Silence.
I've never heard this one before.
What product? Your whole company.
But that's not on the list of things to sell.
I don't know. She took the message and she forwarded it. So I also had with him a very nice conversation.
That's awesome. Yeah. It's like, like, which was like our package, or 5,000 or 10,000 package? It's like, no, the whole thing.
Uh.
That's awesome.
Yes, something like that. And I'm very sure she will have a very nice story to tell in the future.
Yeah, it's like I was the gal that picked up the phone for the boss to sold him and whatever the percentage she got too.
If she was very smart, she first got that agreement in place and then told him.
Most don't think like that, though.
Yeah. So basically, most of the time, I get approached by investors from abroad or corporates from abroad because German startup is still done mostly in German. So the blogs are in German, the podcasts are in German, and there's not a lot of other media outlets that do consistent coverage of startups in Germany. You see a lot of coverage of the really big guys like N26, HelloFresh comes to mind, Delivery Hero and stuff like that. But they're too big for the things I do.
Yeah.
And they're also too big for the ambitions of my clients. So I look into much smaller companies and into much more specific products and tools and stuff like that.
So what specifically do you look for products or services when you're the middleman facilitator for your clients and the entrepreneur?
That really depends on what you're looking for. In the past, I've been looking for a company from abroad into the automation of construction sites. So basically smart machines that do the construction just by themselves with minimal to no supervision from humans.
So like 3D printed houses?
Not so much 3D printed houses, like completely automated machines like excavators, everything completely automated. That was at least the idea. I do believe that will happen at one point in the future, but not right now. And they were basically looking to buy up companies to help them develop the tools, the machines for the future. That is something I do, for example. Or there are also investors out there that are big enough to have to show to their investors, their so-called limited partners, LPs, like insurance companies, like pension funds, that give them the money to manage, to invest. They have to show them investments abroad, in Europe, in Germany. But they're not big enough to have like a permanent office here, to have like staff of 5 or 10 people to scan the whole market. So they're also reaching out to me in order for me to help them to find suitable investment targets.
So I'm just curious, rough ball, you don't have to give it exact, but how much do you make off lining up one of these events for these companies or investors?
If it's not successful, most of the time, zero.
Ooh, so high risk, high reward. Okay.
Yeah, and if they do invest, I get a small percentage share. It's not like I'm driving a Ferrari. I actually don't have a car at all right now.
Oh.
Only my wife has one, but it's okay. You make a good living, but it's not that you get really wealthy.
Right. Yeah, I'm going to say this sounds like one of those, you'll get consistent stream of income, but it's not like the $50 million clothes. And it's like, here you go, Joe, just get on your way now.
Nope, not like that.
Be nice if we could have those deals.
Yeah, that would be really nice. I think I would then need to offer my services to something like private equity. And if you find like 100, 150, $250 million deals, different game.
Oh, yeah. I would say if you play this right, I bet a lot of private equity companies will be reaching out to you. Be like, okay, you're good at facilitating. If you send us whatever, whatever percentage they'll give you too.
Yeah. And so basically that's the idea behind it. What you don't see and hear on my podcast, that what keeps me busy for 12 to 16 hours a day to help both sides match. And I also actually trying to do that on an automated basis. It's called Startup Raven. You can sign up for early access at startupraven.com.
What does it do?
Sorry?
So what does Startup Raven do?
It's, if you forgive me, this little joke, it's like match.com for startups and investors and corporates.
I would say we met.
He's smiling. The audience cannot see it, but they can't see it, but
we're smiling. No, I was laughing because we met on matchmaker.fm, right?
Yeah.
I was, that's what I was thinking. I'm like, it's that site, but for investors to whatever. Okay. That's cool though.
Yeah.
So what is like, if you pay the $100 a year, you're put to the top of the list as a whatever, like Jacob does, I believe his name is.
No, completely different, because you cannot simply in the podcast world, you can match the right podcast with the right guest, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the tech world, it's not that simple. Very simple reason. If you really want to do this on a global basis, you have to think about embargoes. For example, not every Russian investor can invest in every startup. Not every investor from the Middle East can invest in every startup. Not every startup in the US that is, for example, working for the military can take investment from investors from abroad and stuff like that.
Interesting. I didn't know there were rules like that. I knew, like, for us, well, at least here in America, like, you have to be an accredited investor. If I want to be like, I could always call you, but it's better if I'm an accredited investor. That way I can invest here. Otherwise, it's highly recommended you don't.
Yes, it is. And I actually don't work for like the private business angel, small scale business angel, for a very simple reason. It's not economic for me to put all the work in that and then just earn a few bucks on a deal. And it's also not economic for them, because they do get 2, 3, 4, 5 deals, but it's very expensive if they work with me.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to remember. There's a podcaster I listen to, the Tech Meme Ride Home. And I think he's on Angel's List or something, like Angel Investor List or something. And he facilitates investing kind of like you, but he's, for his own fun and humor, he's trying to make his own hedge fund and investing in early startups. But I was just trying to remember, like, what is the Angel List or?
Yeah. Angel List is one of the websites. And that's also one of the things you notice when you're doing this for quite some time, because there's stuff like AngelList, there's stuff like PitchBook, like Crunchbase, but just subjectively speaking, I don't find 70 to 90% of my podcast guests, like the companies they're running, on any of those lists, on any of those platforms. They're very much US centered, US focused, maybe a little bit UK, maybe a little bit Ireland, Australia, stuff like that.
Right.
Not so much non-English speaking countries. Don't get me wrong. If they are looking for international investors like Series B, very late scaling, stuff like 30 million, 100 million investments, then they will be there. But the smaller ones, like the hidden gems, they most of the time not there.
So then that essentially is your job, is to find the contacts, build a relationship, and then build your relationship with the investors too. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. So is it, I'm just now speculating and guessing from your earlier comment, you have a lot of Zoom calls constantly going off to keep up with everyone?
Yeah, more or less. So basically, if you talk to a startup, you don't need to call them like every week. Basically, I do most of the work without any contact yet. And then I suggest like 5 startups for the investor. We go through a little profile and then say, yeah, reach out to them. That could be a match. And then I match them.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds like one of those, you could figure out how to automate it. It would be much more cost effective.
Yes, it will be, but it's really, really hard to do this on an automated basis. I do believe a lot of people tried, a lot of people failed.
Oh yeah. Yeah, many do. Yeah. I'm trying to look up your startup.angel. No, the Raven.
Startupraven.com.
Raven. I'm just looking that up. Okay, cool. So then that's interesting. Is there a specific strategy you're using to just keep tabs on the clients? I mean, it's a similar question, but I'm asking a different way. It's the, Like, do you have a method? Let's say I have a startup company, a podcast network, and I'm looking for investors to grow this. Is there a certain strategy where you go out and maybe check up on someone once a week, once a month kind of thing, and say, I have a network that would be interested in taking your money? Like, what would be some of the steps for that?
Usually when an investor approaches me, they just raised a new fund and okay. they have to invest it within like 1, 2, 3, 5 years. Usually the funds are running for something like around 7 years and they're looking to invest the money pretty early and then cash it out over time. That's okay. basically life cycle of a fund. And they approach me pretty early. They have, for example, a deep tech fund where they also want to have a few investments in Europe. And then they're talking to me and say, okay, look, we're looking at B2B, not necessarily blockchain, but something with AI. We are looking at blockchain investments, something like this. That would be like the frame. And then we go into details because everyone has specific preferences.
You
can have a lot of different blockchain startups, some of them doing very crypto topics, very much like Finoa I just interviewed. They are one of the hidden champions. They are one of the global top five crypto custodians for institutional investors, but barely anyone knows them.
Interesting. I didn't know until right now.
And then on the other hand, you have also on blockchain, for example, fan tokens of very small football clubs, soccer clubs, you would call them in the US.
And okay.
That's the whole spectrum. And I have to talk to the investor until I know which part of the spectrum they are looking for when they want to invest in blockchain and stuff like that. And then I go out on my search. So I have a lot of startups that I've already interviewed, that I've already met. I would say a few thousand. Yeah, well, I for every startup that I have on my podcast, I have turned down at least 10 to 15. I was just planning a new publication on Thursday. And when I looked at my episode count, I'm at episode 317. For my English-only podcast. And before that, I did a German podcast.
Wow.
So there's a big network. I also talk to a lot of other podcasts and other bloggers. In times before Corona, I attended a lot of events all across Europe, Eastern Europe, Southern Europe, US, UK, you name it. And so basically you build up pretty fast a pretty good network and also people you can talk to that know other people.
Yeah, that's key. Especially when like networking like you, it's just they may not know it, but they probably have a guy or a gal that they could call upon. That's mm-hmm. interesting. So I'm curious because you mentioned a few times in your demonstration, has the crypto and blockchain / NFT been all the craze right now and with investors?
Not necessarily for me, because I'm working more with B2B business concepts.
Okay.
So more like on the crypto custody side, there was where I've seen some interest. I'm not necessarily talking directly to the people who buy an NFT for themselves.
Right.
That is not my type of investor. So that craze completely passed by. I do see some interest in blockchain, but it used to be much more. But right now, you really have to prove that there's a business model behind it. Just to rename your company, whatever, blockchain, whatever.
Block.
That doesn't make it cool anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Twitter, what was it? No, it wasn't Twitter. It was the one Jack Dorsey owns that went from, I think, like Square to Block.
Yeah.
Either.
Yep.
Yeah. That's just, yeah, silly stuff. So then, I'm like running out of questions to follow up on that. What are some things you do when you're not answering emails or on podcasts to just keep yourself busy, not run your mind too far?
Oh, so basically I'm right now in front of my desk on my chair, and I tend to spend at least 10 hours a day here, Monday to Friday. I also realized I need to have some rules. So I'm not necessarily spending them all in one row here. So I take some time off for lunch. I take some time off for dinner to spend with my family. In the morning, I get my little son ready for kindergarten. I drop him off with a car in kindergarten, and then my work starts. I also realized, for example, one of my rules is I usually don't do meetings before noon. So the morning is all answering the emails, getting social media done, getting all the stuff done I need to get done. Tuesdays, I usually don't make any meetings. That's the day I get my shit done during the week. And Friday afternoon, most of the time I don't do meetings and I do some workout, plus I try to run on a regular basis.
Okay. So it sounded like from the way you're explaining, you didn't have rules before, but yep. Recently you've restructured.
That is something I'm developing. And the more I talk to entrepreneurs, the more I see that every one of them is developing their own set of rules. And basically, I'm listening to them and I tend to use the rules I find useful and ignore the rules that I don't find useful. Plus, I establish some for myself. It's not like Gibbs rules that they all are numbered. It's something that I learn over time, sometimes really the hard way.
Yeah, those are usually the most effective rules too. Yeah, for me, when I first started podcasting, I just took anyone and everyone that had a pulse. I didn't care. And then, but I was like one of those, I think kind of like you, but I wasn't, it wasn't my job. I was chatting. I think I had like 8 or 10 interviews in one day. And at the end of it, I said, no, I am not doing that again.
Also, I found it's time consuming just to get the interviews scheduled. And
seriously,
then adhere to a regular publication schedule, because when it was starting out in early 2021, you know, height of Corona, nobody knew what will be, what will happen in the next few days, next few weeks. I had completely planned out my schedule for the first quarter, and a lot of people already scheduled their interviews, and one after another just completely canceled them. So let's talk next year. Let's talk in half a year and stuff like that. So my complete construction of the first quarter completely collapsed. So I'm now tending to get some recordings done, let's say 5 to 10, sometimes 10. And then I do my scheduling. Yeah. Plus, what most people don't realize, you have to do a lot in the post-production. So after this is recorded, you have to have someone who edits the audio, edits the video, get the intro in, get the outro in, get the graphics ready, get the title, get the show notes, get everything published, get a blog post for it, get an Instagram post for it, a Twitter post, yada, yada, yada.
You do way more than I do.
And so that is really, really time consuming. And it is. The best I found is to do it not one after another, but like assembly line principle. I do the same stuff for one video. I do the same stuff for another video. And since I do have regular scouting and consulting clients, I also tend to outsource a lot of the tasks like video editing, like audio editing. I found a few reliable people and then basically just give them the raw tracks, the cover. They already have the intro and the outro and they just do their job. Then I have to listen to it, watch it one more time, do the show notes, do everything, the blog post, and then it goes out at the next possible publication date. And then I do the next and then I do the next. Plus it all goes onto my internet radio station. Plus it all goes to Himalaya. Do you know Himalaya?
I've not heard of it. What is it?
It is the world's largest podcasting platform. It's based in mainland China.
Himalaya. Would Buzzsprout upload to that automatically?
No. You have to, first you have to register there as a foreigner with your passport. It takes a few steps and a few tricks just to get on there.
Okay.
Yeah. But I did it, I achieved it, and now I can I can really claim I'm a global podcast. I may not be available in North Korea, but
I don't think many of us are available there. You are there?
Exactly. Nope. Not as far as I know.
I would say from what I could see in my data, I could see South Korea, but like North Korea is nothing. Oh, thank you. I'll check that out after.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, you have a lot going on your end. For me, I would say I usually, like, when people come in, we chat for like 5 minutes, get to know each other, but we had a bit of a hiccup coming in, so just skip that one. For namesake, I'd say we're already like halfway into the show. How can you give us your name and your up and coming story?
Yes. So basically, my name is Jörn Menninger. Was born and raised in Germany. Then went to I did a vocational training at the bank, like it's usual here in Germany. Then I went to university. I did my senior year in college in Texas. Graduated from there at Midwestern State. Go Mustangs! And then came back to finish my degree here. And then I started as a consultant. That's basically the very short story.
Okay. So other than the Go Mustangs part, we pretty much heard all that already. That's awesome. I did not know that was how you pronounce your name. I'm sitting here going like,
Don't worry. Joe is totally fine. Everybody on my podcast knows me as Joe. The reason behind it is I joined a fraternity when I was in college. And my pledge educator, he was not pretty, he couldn't pronounce Ö. He always said Joern, and I said, no, it's Ö, umlaut. So he started calling me umlaut. Ever since, I'm totally cool with Joe.
Hey, that's a good story. I like it.
Yeah, mental high five to JR here. We're still friends. Don't worry. It's just a fascinating story.
That is pretty fascinating. So then, so you're truly an international person everywhere other than obviously North Korea, but I don't think even like I am. What is the biggest thing you're noticing? Are you getting more comments, interactions on your social media because of this being known everywhere?
Not so much. I do have a very small, very sharp group of listeners, of guests. And everybody outside of this, like a very small slice of the world, doesn't care about me, doesn't know me. I tend to get more listeners, more interactions, more comments on places like LinkedIn.
Yeah, it's very business.
For example, on YouTube. Yeah, the more business orientated the channel is, the more feedback I get. But most of the time, people tend only to like it in public and then send me a comment in private.
Same. I thought that was just me.
No. Totally normal. I also have, since I realized this, I have an audience feedback survey where people don't have to give their name, where people don't have to register with an email. They just have to fill out a Google form and can tell me everything that's on their heart.
Okay. Yep. That's fair. Yeah. I had something similar to that. It was just, I wouldn't even ask for your name. I just asked for your email, but I even clarified. I'm like, this is just to like, know this is a human. I'm not actually going to send you an email kind of thing. So I was getting a lot of feedback from that. They're like, oh, he's just wanting like an email as an identifier kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It was just one of those subtly. I'm like, it's easy to search up an email instead of a name. Cause there could be a lot of Joe Blows and you're like, but if he has this very specific email, like, that's the one I need to go back to.
Mm-hmm. I also found it pretty hard to encourage my audience to give me good reviews wherever they are.
Do you do it now though?
Not so much. From time to time, I tell them I reward comments with whatever when they're doing it. But it tended to be, in the very beginning, just people complaining. 1-star review, 2-star reviews, just complaining. That was the only reviews I got for some time. And then I really started to encourage my audience. Guys, give me some feedback, give me some good reviews, and so on and so forth. And I even got some really awesome, five-star reviews on iTunes. Startup Radio rules.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. So yeah, like for me, actually, after a year of doing this, I'm just now getting feedback. And that's one of those, I've learned through time and just observing, it's better to ask at the end, because if they listened all the way to the end, they're already committed. And you say, hey, you know, help the show out. I'm not asking for money. Just write me a review and anything you want, like the add in, throw that into. My new little schmick is like, if you're specifically on Apple Podcast, I can pull your review and permanently put it on my website for all to see. So say, if you write something bad, please make it at least comedic.
Did somebody already try giving you a very strange looking bit.ly URL just to get it on your website?
No, I've had two of my guests rate and review. I've seen those bit things. It's super annoying. Is there do you know of a way to keep them in check?
I don't know. I had the problem, or I still have the problem right now. People who are checking out my website, startuprate.io, they will realize it's pretty slow. It's pretty old because we're in the process of replacing it. Mm. And with this website, basically 50% of my daily to-dos was weeding out the spam comments. I do have a tool that helps me quite a lot, but I tended to get 90-95% spam comments in WordPress.
Interesting.
Yeah, there are bots out there you can hire, and they're just doing comments with links to websites they want to rank higher.
Yeah, that's one thing I've heard, but I also heard that actually affects the blogger or the poster in general from like Google if you get too many of those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For the website, right? I'm still doing this, but I'm soon changing the complete setup because I had a WordPress, or I still have a WordPress website. It's way too complicated, way too technical. I'm shifting to something much easier to maintain just for me as a non-technical person.
I'm just curious, what are you switching to?
It's called Cart, CARRD.co, Cart.
Okay.
You can have a one-page website, pretty easy, drag and drop. You get 80 websites for $50 a year.
Oh, okay. That's
plus, you have also to buy the URLs, or you get onto a subdomain of Cart.
I mean, yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
Like I use what's on podium.com. It's like a full AI driven one. I just realized when I said the comment, I'm like, oh, I should go check it. And I'm like, oh, it's gone. The AI unclicked it. Damn it. I'm going to talk to him. But it automatically updates. So whenever my RSS feed publishes mm-hmm. something, it actually makes a whole new page on the website and just, and you can listen to everything there. It's one of those I noticed once I bought into a founder rate for him was like $15 a month. Now he's like jumped at almost $25-$30 a month. But I've noticed that August when I bought in, my downloads and everything just went straight to the moon.
Yeah.
The SEO ranking.
Yeah. I had the same experience with a new hosting service. I changed hosting services because I was pretty unhappy with the other one I had. And now I'm on Sounder, and basically the analytics are much better. It's connected to more apps. It shows me much more downloads. So in the old analytics, I had something like 3,000 downloads a month. And now I'm back to something like 20,000-25,000 because they simply connected to more apps. They're blocking less downloads. They're blocking less numbers.
Okay. That's interesting. So like for me, I'm just curious, have you noticed this as your end on the podcaster side for the data, the iOS 14 update, has that affected you?
Not really. It affected me when it affects me every time Apple changes the rules, how downloads are counted in the podcast app.
Mm-hmm.
Or how Spotify does it. They're two biggest pages where you listen to my audio podcast. That has a big impact on me. But the changes in iOS, because I don't have an app, at least yet, I am not specifically active on Apple. So I'm only available on Apple Podcasts. That's my only touch point there.
Yeah, that's same for me. Like I noticed like when I first started, yeah, I was young, but I was getting like 20-ish downloads an episode and it was like great. And then suddenly in March when they introduced iOS 14, it's like, you're getting 2 downloads per episode. I'm like, what the hell is happening here?
What the?
And then essentially I looked up the data on it and in Apple, but I can't see it because they like blocked it. This one, I had an interview with a big wig in the finance industry with UBS and all that. And that got like 350 downloads. And my website, once I like updated everything, I'm still getting hits and it's like another 100. I'm like, but my host is like, you got 3 downloads.
Yes, like, that's also a problem. I used to be on a very like technical oriented hosting service here in Germany,
mm-hmm.
where you can basically with a few skills you could see almost everything. And when I looked into this this analytics suite or whatever you want to call it, it was more like a download in Excel what happened. And when you went through it, I realized that I get hits and downloads from more than 120 apps and websites, including ones in Korean script, in Taiwanese traditional characters, in Hong Kong traditional characters, apps based in Africa, apps based in the US, in Germany, Italy, France, wherever, and they were all counting this. But when I looked into my old hosting service, there was no counting of them. So still here in my new service, not yet, but I do believe they're better than before. So it has a big impact just for your own motivation to realize, oh, look, there used to be 3,000 downloads a month, and now I'm still doing the same stuff. I'm just on a different hosting platform, and now I get 20,000.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It's amazing the how much data is actually held back from us.
Yes, and here my new hosting service, it got better when I basically connected it with all the accounts I have on the different apps like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Pandora, Amazon Music, Deezer, and so on and so forth. And the more accounts I had, the more accounts I could connect, the better my download numbers have gotten. So that's a big thing, I do believe.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's...
And now only podcasters are still listening, right?
Just honestly, we lost them at a certain point.
Yeah, sorry, guys. We're here, podcasting geeks.
Yeah, we're all about the data. It's like, okay, how do we optimize here? It was funny. I had actually a call on Saturday. It was like a 2.5 call and the guy's like picking my brain about podcasting, and I'm like, just out of curiosity, I normally would have charged for this, but if I started up like a how to podcast, get up and running, zero to hero, would you be interested? And he's like, yes. I'm like, okay, cool, I'll build it. My honestly, there's enough free stuff on the internet, but I mean, if you're willing to ready and willing to pay me, I'll build it.
Yeah. Actually, I do believe what would be great is like to have YouTube videos that really tell you how to do the technical stuff, and they have to be like up to date. Because if you have done something like in 2018, it's completely out of date today.
It really is. Yeah. Like for me, when I was studying, I noticed that like the 2016 to 2018 was like a huge, everyone was posting about podcasting, how to do it. I mean, there were still people who posted throughout, but it's hard for them to rank with YouTube. But yeah, that's one thing I agree. And that's what I was going to tell everyone. It's like, I'd build this infrastructure, essentially like a roadmap, zero to hero with videos. It was like, we're podcasters. We don't really like reading that much. So like, just like the links here and there, like you sent me, it's like, okay, if you click this, you can get this. And yeah, it's kind of like me. It's like, I wish I knew this like a year ago when I was building it out.
Yes, you learn. And the good thing is you learn while you're doing stuff. The bad thing is you only learn while you do stuff. Most of the time you have an idea in your mind and basically you cannot find any solution, somebody who has done it before. And that's when you basically just try it out. You have a look. Is this working? Is it not working? I don't know.
Yeah, it's very, let's say how I approach this. Because like for me, when I first started, I was highly edited. I was adding transitions. I was this and that. And like I said, at a certain point, I overbooked myself and I said, screw it. I'm in the first 5 minutes when we're introducing each other. I'll cut that out and we're sending it as is. But that was
Sometimes I had the same approach, but basically now I'm back to having somebody else editing it for me. And that really helps. But for most people, they don't realize you have some preparation work. For example, for 1 hour podcast episode, like 30 minutes, 1 hour, it depends, especially for me, how often somebody has been a guest, has been interviewed on blogs, on podcasts, on YouTube, whatever. I tend to look a lot into what they've been asked before. And
interesting. That's a lot of work. I'm saying I do more. Yes. That's why I'm saying it's interesting, because like that's why I asked, like, what would we talk about when I'm in the booking form? So then I sit there, and then if it's one of those topics I don't know, then I'll look you up. And like this one person want to talk about metaphysics and spirituality, and I'm like, okay, I kind of know it, but I don't know what he's going into, so I'm gonna look him up, kind of thing. But yes. Yeah, like,
and then you have to. Basically, then you have to review it. You have to do the show notes. So basically, you are again listening to yourself. You try to get the best out of it. You try to have some snippets for marketing. And then basically you go on to posting. And for me, that takes a lot of time because I do have one main podcast and sub podcast. So basically, if people are only interested in FinTech in Germany, they can subscribe to my sub channel, FinTech in Germany by StartupRate.io. And every time I have FinTech content, I post it on my main podcast and on the respective sub podcast. Then it goes on to YouTube. I have to write a blog post. I have to... put the blog post also on Medium. I have to edit the blog post a little bit, send it to my syndication partners. I have to upload it in China. I have to upload it onto my own radio station. Plus, I have to upload it onto a few cloud drives for my syndication partners. It takes, when I have the news that go across like all the channels, it's at least 12 hours of work just to get all the publications done and scheduled.
Damn. Okay. I don't do that much. That's where you sent all your stuff beforehand, which actually, like I said in the email before we started this whole recording, I'm like, no one's actually asked me to put copyrights for a photo before. I'll do it. This is genuinely a first time someone's like, you need to do this.
Yes.
But yeah, I usually just ask them, like, give me your general pitch of you, your podcast description. And usually they know it's like, keep it about 2-3 paragraphs at worst. This one person sent me 3 pages and expected me to post it. I'm like, I can only put 5,000 words into this. You're wanting me to put like a lot. That's where I had to tell
Mobile. I know that. But the thing is with the credits, it's the very simple reason. He's a friend of mine. He's a hobby photographer. He has an amazing camera. And basically, he spent a whole day just with me walking through Frankfurt doing what is called a photo walk. I learned there. Yeah. And then we just took some electric scooters and drove from one place to another, took photos one place to another. He didn't charge me even 1 cent, but he spent the whole day with me. And so I always have to give him credit.
No, that's awesome. And especially hearing that, I'm putting it in. And it's just, for me, because I'm trying to get on other shows. And that's actually one thing I joked with a lot of my group and my friends. It's like, you know, it's funny. We all see this podcast and we listen to it, but it's actually really hard to get the podcaster's attention. To actually get their attention in and figure out whether I'm going on your show or you're coming on mine kind of thing.
Yes, yes. It's really hard to do. But on the other hand, now there are fortunately some platforms to actually match guests and podcasters.
Yeah, like where we met. And that's how I've been reaching a lot. But still, I to this day, I have a generic copy. I don't even put their name in. It's just more like general addressing. This is what I do. This is my story. I sent out like 2,000 messages over a month. I only got back maybe 200. And of the 200, I only got booked on 3 shows.
Oh, okay. For me, it was something like... I went through like many of the profiles and then somebody said, oh, look, I'm a global 2.5% podcast according to List Notes. I looked myself up on List Notes. Oh, look, I'm a global top 0.5% podcast. So I put it on there. Then I looked into Chartable. Oh, look, I'm a global top 125 tech podcast. I'm a global top 75 science podcast top. You're now checking
I'm literally going to List Notes now. I'm like, where am I?
And that's all the stuff that I put in. And so basically I do get a lot of requests to be on shows, a lot of requests to be guests on my shows. And basically I can only log in like every 2 weeks and then send emails to all the people. Right now I have to put them on wait lists.
Same. I am booked out to like March, and I have to tell people, I'm like, if you're up for it, you're in, but there's a wait list now.
Yeah, same for me. And I just talked before we started recording, I was in another call and was talking to a startup and I told them, well, earliest possible publication would be April 28th if you do the recording now.
Yeah. No, that was me when I first started because I had so many. I was like almost 4 or 5 months out and one of them was like, we can't wait that long. Can you send it quicker? I'm like, sure. Dumped everything in all of April. And now I'm like, I have no content to give me a buffer.
So, oh, yeah. Yeah. I know that. Plus, you have to see in the startup world, a lot of stuff is changing. Or, for example, they cannot disclose right now the fundraising, and basically you always have to sign agreements, don't publish it before X and Y, or we have to wait until this and that happened and stuff like this. So it makes it a little bit more difficult to schedule, and that's why I love to have a lot of content on the shelf, either already edited or to be edited soon.
So actually I'm just curious, and then we're gonna get back to the business stuff. Where on Listen Notes did you find your stats? Because I'm on my profile.
When you wait, can I share the screen here?
It should be. Hang on, let me give you permission.
Yeah,
there you go.
For everybody on an audio podcast, I am now sharing my screen. Listen Notes, and then you see here.
Okay, so I don't even have any of those on mine. Okay.
You just got started. I'm doing this stuff since 2014.
Yeah. I'm like looking at mine. I'm like, I'm not seeing this. All right. Then I'm not going completely crazy.
Yeah.
I'm still a year. No, I mean, in the scheme of podcasting, like 3 years or more, then you're actually a thing.
Hmm. Hmm. Yeah, that's also a problem. I once read an article on Chartable that each week some more than 10,000 new podcasts have been started on average. But there have been numbers from 2020.
But the die-off rate is insane too.
Sorry?
The fail rate, the not continue?
Yeah. It's pretty high, but not episodes, but 10,000 new podcasts a week. And most of them in English, so that there's always a lot of competition. That's why you have to have a focus in business as well as in podcasting.
Right.
Actually, you may notice that I brand my podcast "The Authority on German Startups." Simple reason behind it: I was doing an interview with a platform that helps you to book street artists to like fancy company events or something like that. And then they started to promote the interview. We have been on startuprate.io, the authority on German startups. And I said, if somebody else says this, I can claim it as well.
Right? If they say it, well, then it must be true.
Yes, totally.
Well, that's good. That's very powerful. Those who are not watching it, I'm reading all the different like stats in the corner for him. And it's impressive. I like your screen by the way. How did you design your Zoom background?
It's pretty easy. That's almost completely free, a usage-free picture from the Frankfurt skyline.
Okay.
From Pixabay. And then okay. I just used, sorry for all the graphic designers out there. I used PowerPoint and put all the stuff on it.
All the graphic designers are just sitting there going,
they get a heart attack.
He did that. I was like, oh, we hear Canva something.
Sorry?
I thought you were like going to say like Canva or something. I'm like, okay, that's kind of excusable. But PowerPoint, like, man, I haven't used that in ages.
The thing is, if you are in consulting, there are a few tools you have to get really good in it.
Hmm.
And PowerPoint is just one of them. And that's why I tended to do, to have like a lot of stuff done in just PowerPoint because it's very easy. You put in the picture, you make it full screen, and then you write on it whatever you like Schriftart. Sorry, it's now past 9 p.m. here, and it's getting really difficult with my vocabulary. Yes, you can select the font and the color and the size, and you're good to go.
Awesome. Hey, I don't want to hold you up too long. You do got to get some sleep or you're just going to be sitting in front of the computer all night.
I tend to work until at least 9:30-ish, 10 p.m., like almost every day.
So, okay, we're pushing close to bedtime. Then I got three
going. Why is everybody thinking as soon as I'm off work, I can go to bed?
We're all just sitting here like, poor Jody, he just needs to go to bed.
I'm a husband, I'm a father, so there's still a lot to do. Speaking about cleaning up the kitchen, putting the toys back into place and stuff like that. So
from one job to another.
No time to go to bed yet. Sorry?
So from one job to another job.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Josh, nonetheless, it was totally a pleasure to be your guest here. I think Absolutely. We talked a little bit about startup investing, about entrepreneurship, mm-hmm. and been a pretty big share of the interview was being a podcasting geek.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. If they don't like it, they can go get a different episode. I got usually three going out questions for you. So other than work, And what have you been doing to keep yourself busy during these COVID lockdown times?
I tended to cook a lot. I actually share a lot of what I'm cooking on my Instagram account. Well. Almost everything. I taught myself, for example, to make bagels at home.
Ooh.
Yeah, from buckwheat. It's good for your blood sugar levels. I, of course, learned a lot about marketing and stuff like that for my podcast, as well as how to run a business remotely.
Okay. So I'm going to say now it sounds like we're all going to have to go look at your Instagram and look at the buckwheat bagel you made.
Wait, I'll share my Instagram account with you as well.
So while you're doing that, the other question, the other going out question is, someone aspiring to be like you, just starting entrepreneur, father, podcaster, what are some tips, tricks, or advice you'd give them to start down that path?
Be sure to have a long runway. Be sure to be able to take care of your family. No big vacations for you in the foreseeable future. lots of work, and get the buy-in of your partner, of your wife, of your girlfriend, of your domestic partner, whatever. Get their buy-in, because without them, you cannot do it. And get some rules, not only for you, like no meetings in the morning, no meetings on Tuesdays. Get your shit done then and there. Get a regular rhythm mm-hmm. into your work and your private life, because it simply won't work if you have an office somewhere downtown and you get back at home at 11 p.m. every night, and then you get up at 7, drop your kids off, and then disappear until night again. So that's not going to work. You have to ask your partner, what can you support? Where do I need to support? How would be the agreement? For example, for me, I don't work usually during weekends. There are some exceptions for people who can only make podcast recordings on the weekends.
Right.
When I'm a guest, or when I have a very interesting guest, but I tend to not to reply, not to check emails, not to be on social media during the weekends. It's completely dedicated to my family.
Perfect. And I'll say not that much interesting happens over the weekend anyways, that if it's big enough, you get like an alert on your phone kind of thing.
Yeah. Plus the most interesting stuff you can never repeat is to watch your kids, to be with your wife.
Exactly.
Because if there's a funny video on YouTube, it will still be there on Monday.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. It'll be there. They want their ads. So then other than that, where can everyone contact you at?
Oh, it's pretty easy. They can go to www.startuprate.io and reach out to me. Or they can email joe@startuprate.io. They can find me on LinkedIn. Or they can check out www.startup.radio, which is a 24/7 internet radio station. And there's a contact form, and it also goes straight into my inbox.
Be sure to mention this show and his buckwheat bagels.
Yeah,
they look delicious, by the way.
Yeah, you have to write something that I can associate with, like in the first line, like... somewhere
Josh Bolton buckwheat bagel.
Yeah, for example, that would be awesome, because everything else goes into my eye filter. I may or may not look into it, and if it doesn't get past the eye filter, I may never look into it again.
So yeah, you got to be extra creative for copy. Make sure he sees it.
Yes. On my new website, there will be even a link to a Google form where you could pitch guests, content, startups, whatever.
Yeah, no, that's brilliant. I have one of those on mine.
And I'm on Twitter.
Are you intentionally inciting riots?
Oh, no.
It's just more of like your Instagram posting over to Twitter.
No, actually, I tend to share I have two backend tools for social media, and I tend to share what is happening right now in the German speaking startup scene on social media, on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, and on the Telegram account, so people can get it straight to their cell phones. Basically, what I do, I take all the German content and basically translate as much as I can fit into a tweet.
Okay.
For example, something like N26 loses a CEO for Germany. And then you have the link and you can click on the link and get it translated with Google Translate. That's what I do. And that's how I got a lot of followers on social media. Because, again, there's barely somebody else who does it. And there's no one who does it consistently.
Yeah, no, that's the biggest one. There may be someone who's doing it as we're speaking, but it once, maybe twice a week, which is not reliable.
Yeah, and most of the time, if people do it like almost full time, they tend to do it something like 3 to 6 months, and then they stop.
Yeah, but it's like podcasts. The statistics, either you get 30 episodes, or they quit either before 30 episodes or 3 to 6 months, and then they quit. I think it's like if you can make it past that threshold and you're in the home stretch, it just becomes a time game.
Yes.
All right. Absolute honor and a pleasure to have you on.
Totally my pleasure.
Be safe. Don't step on too many Legos when you're cleaning up the stuff after the kids.
I'll try.
We'll be hearing it over here on America. You're just like, Scheiße.
I'm impressed by your German knowledge.
Thank you.
Well, congratulations, you made it to the end. You're an awesome person. Not many make it here. So, being the awesome person that you are, can you do me one more awesome favor? Can you rate and review this on whatever podcast services you're using? App, if you do it on Apple and you leave an actual written review, I have a thing on my website. I will take your written review and post it for all to see. Congratulations, you're permanently sealed on my site. Otherwise, I am trying to do YouTube more and live streaming. I will try to put as many of the YouTube links in the description of the show as I can. So give your boy some extra help over on YouTube. Watch my videos. I just mute it and change the channel. Change the window or something. But yeah, that's it. Thank you for being awesome and see you next time.